It yearns for the revelation of the glory of the Lord of heaven and earth and requests on man's behalf only what will make this glory shine forth. But the Christian does not cooperate only in God's work within him during prayer. He also cooperates in the work of the sovereign and holy God in the whole world. This prayer is a combat more than a labor. However, the Christian is not alone in persevering in this labor and this combat. The Spirit of Christ quickens him, leads him, sustains him, and encourages him. When Ferdinand Menegas considers the future of Christianity in the world, the scholar in him is filled with the vehemence of the prophets, and he gives us dear warnings. If theology persists in disregarding the importance of prayer, if Christians cling to an egocentric prayer commanded solely by their own interests, if, under the influence of hostile philosophies, they renounce prayer, then, he predicts, our century will end in spiritual darkness and scientific barbarism. Either Christianity will conquer the world through prayer, or it will perish. This is a matter of life or death for Christianity. Conversely, once authentic Christian prayer, inspired only by the interests and the glory of God, is rediscovered, then Christianity will experience a new purity and a new expansion. Thanks to Christianity, mankind will rise to a higher civilization. Christianity conquers. Only in communities where the eruptive and primitive spirit of evangelical prayer continues to unfurl its action. Prayer is the missionary phenomenon par excellence. The only truly civilizing power is the praying church. The Ecclesia Orans Praying Church is the one and only wellspring of a real, profound and enduring progress, oh for regenerating progress both for the individual and for society. And why does prayer have such great power? Because to repeat once more, it is not man's activity but God's action within man, in which man participates. Christ said, "My Father is at work until now, and I am at work as well." John 5:17. The man and woman who pray contact God's all-powerful action within themselves, surrender to it, cooperate with it, and offer it the means of penetrating a world that would otherwise remain closed to its riches. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst, Mark 5:6. The road that leads to perfect union with God is a long one. Prayer alternates between desire and supplication, combat and fidelity. Little by little it is purified in patience and selflessness, until it becomes in its totality a pure desire for the glory of God. The appetite for happiness, so deeply rooted in man's heart, is one of the most powerful stimulants of our spiritual progress. Even so, far from fearing this appetite, we must allow it to be strengthened in mental prayer. 69 Happiness, hunger for the absolute, akin to the appetite for happiness, combines with it to draw us toward God. It already witnesses to the work of the Holy Spirit within us. 70 This hunger for the absolute, but on earth, our need for happiness and for the absolute cannot be fully satisfied. That is why our prayer is basically the supplication of exiles. 71 The groanings of the Spirit, this is a supplication vibrant with hope. Obviously, we cannot help to see God here and now, but He invites us without further delay to an ever-growing intimacy with Him. 72 Hope will not leave us disappointed, Rom 5:5. In any event, our desire for God must be purified in patience. There is still too much covetousness in it. 73 Prayer must be a fast before it becomes a feast. Let us be on our guard against clinging more to the Lord's gifts than to the Lord Himself. 74 The giver or the gifts. God permits spiritual dryness and nights precisely so that our hope may be stripped of any alloys. 75 Is it for nothing? This purification of the desire for God is in no sense its attenuation. The purer this desire, the more it becomes an insatiable thirst for the living God, a thirst which is vehemently expressed in the Psalms and in the writings of the great mystics. 76 like parched land PS 143:6, our desire for union with God will be granted someday. This union will be the work of agape love, for its origin lies not in man's heart, but in the heart of God. 77 Begging from God, this is the sign by which we can recognize the presence and the progress of the love of charity in us, when the desire for the Lord's glory becomes the one and only motivating force of our whole spiritual life. 78 The glory of God comes first. 69 Happiness. Our attitude toward happiness reminds me of the response of an audience of students before whom I developed the following theme: the great benefit of mental prayer is that it awakens our appetite for happiness if it is dormant, and intensifies it if it is already alive and well. During the discussion and exchange of views that followed, their reactions surprised me. One of the students asked, "Should we not rather expect mental prayer to satisfy this need in us?" Another student suggested that the goal of all spiritual seekers is to arrive at holy indifference, and that both Buddhists and Christians aspire to this as the supreme wisdom. For isn't it only when we bring our appetite for happiness under control, that we finally achieve the inner calm required for spiritual progress? The debate was lively and prolonged. The students were on the defensive, as if I were threatening a hard-earned tranquility of theirs, that consisted precisely in the suppression of their hunger for happiness. However, I think I succeeded in convincing them that this very yearning could be the best stimulus to their spiritual progress. Shall I succeed in convincing you as well? Those who lose their desire for happiness soon die of inanition. Conversely, those who fearlessly nurture this desire derive their greatest joys from it, and their bitterest disappointments as well. In any event, they are intensely alive. They do, of course, run the risk of despairing of creatures. But isn't this risk the greatest opportunity, or rather the greatest grace, if it makes them understand that their appetite for happiness can be sated by nothing less than God Himself? The fact remains that prayer can act as a kind of filter for this appetite, and thus prevent it from being corrupted. The great men and women of prayer begin early to have an intense craving for happiness. And they want nothing less than absolute happiness. That is why God detaches them from everything. Incidentally, detachment is not indifference. Rather, it enables them to reach out to all creatures in their secret hunger for happiness. It impels them to draw others to the God whom they themselves are seeking in hope with their whole being. They do not only look to God to fill their human capacity for happiness. He, for his part, hollows out within them totally new capacities. This enlarging of their spiritual potential causes them suffering, but it also increases their hope. They realize that God excavates only in order to give more lavishly. I cannot advise you to insistently, as you begin your mental prayer, to concentrate on your fundamental desire for happiness, rather than on the various appetites on the periphery of your being. Free this desire from everything that obstructs or overlays it. Direct it toward the one for whom it yearns, perhaps without realizing it. It will soon come alive, and become a permanent guest within you, perhaps a very disturbing one. You will no longer be able to satisfy it with mere reflections of happiness. It will constantly importune you to attain to a greater knowledge and possession of the God who gives joy. 70. This hunger for the absolute. Yesterday as I listened to you, I felt as if somewhere I had already heard what you were telling me. But try as I might to ransack the archives of my memory, I found nothing. Today the memory you awakened in me is emerging from the shadows, and in such detail that I am surprised. Perhaps it will offer you some light. A young priest friend of mine found it increasingly difficult to concentrate, and this made it impossible for him to pursue his studies. He consulted a psychiatrist, and afterwards told me the advice he had received. Actually, the psychiatrist's various recommendations could be summed up in one counsel: age quad ages. Do what you are doing. the psychiatrist explained, put your mind on what you are doing. Perform conscious acts, and begin by simply recording the sensations that are offered to you. You wash your hands, experience the freshness of the water. You eat a peach, experience its delicious taste. Your trouble is that you are divided. Your consciousness, engrossed by other things, is only half aware of what you are doing. I remember objecting strongly, for I had the feeling that the advice my friend had received could lead him completely astray. So I said to him, I challenge you to succeed in putting your mind totally on sensations. I questioned him to verify whether my reaction was well-founded. You admit you cannot concentrate, but that is probably not the only symptom of what is going on within you. When you drive a car, don't you always go a little faster than you should? As if you were in a hurry to reach your destination, and were going to find there something you have long been pursuing? And isn't it true that you don't know how to relax? That you are always disappointed in things and in people, and first of all in yourself? He agreed. Well then, I added, here is my diagnosis. You are inhabited by a hunger for the absolute which, since it is never satisfied, makes it impossible for you to stop seeking. This is nothing else than the need for God, which has grown in you through your industrious and fervent years in the seminary. And today you are, to use the words of the psalmist, like the hind that longs for the running waters, PS 42:2. You are like parched land, PS 143:6. The difficulty you experience in concentrating, and the symptoms to which I have just drawn your attention, and which you acknowledge, are simply manifestations of a profound need of which you have not been aware until now. It is not by begging for meager contentments from creatures that you will be cured, but by understanding that your hunger can be satisfied only by God. The next morning, I was expecting my friend for breakfast as usual. When he did not come, I decided to breakfast alone. An hour and a half later, he came into my office and explained why he was late. After my Mass, as I was beginning my thanksgiving, I became aware of the presence within me of a hunger for the absolute that I had never yet identified. And so I directed this hunger toward God. It was as if I were emancipating a prayer that had long been held captive. Time passed without my being aware of it. Although I am usually tormented by distractions and, I am not proud to admit it, in a hurry to finish, today I spent 2 hours in mental prayer. To make me understand what had happened to him, my friend used an amusing image. During these 2 hours, when a great peace had settled in my soul, I had only to place my adorations, petitions, praises, intentions on an escalator that carried them straight up to God. Am I mistaken in thinking that there is in you, as in my friend, an as yet unidentified need for the absolute, that communicates impatience and anxiety to your whole life? Learn to recognize this need, stop focusing it on creatures that can only disappoint and exasperate it, and turn it deliberately toward God, its one real object. I don't know if you will have the same experience as my friend, who was prepared for it by a very generous life. At any rate, I am sure that you will get rid of this indefinable anxiety that harasses you, this ever-renewed sense of disappointment. Hunger for the absolute is not just one aspiration among many others. It is the fundamental aspiration of every human person. It may be denied or repressed, but it cannot be eliminated. It is part and parcel of us, the substance of our spiritual being. On earth, in heaven, in hell, nobody can rid himself of it the way one throws off a coat. In hell it is, as it were, in the pure state. The damned are condemned to their need for the absolute, but are permanently deprived of their object. Theirs is a ravenous hunger that has nothing to devour, an inextinguishable fire that has nothing to consume except the one in whom it burns. In heaven, this aspiration is fulfilled at the very instant that one attains the beatific vision of the living God. Shall be content in your presence, PS 17:15.